Intel's boss tells us why the company is putting billions of dollars into European chip manufacturing. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. The semiconductor giant has announced plans to ramp up capacity in Ireland to make highly sought-after chips used in everything from electric cars to computers, cell phones, and refrigerators. It's part of a major investment in European production, which could be worth more than $94 billion in the next decade. And it comes amid a global chip shortage that's caused companies of all kinds to reduce or stop production. The BBC's Theo Leggett is in Munich for the International Mobility Show. He caught up with Intel's boss and asked him why the company is focusing on Europe to boost manufacturing.
The company believes there will be a lot more demand for chips from Europe in the years to come because this is a major hub of car making. Demand for chips is going to become ever greater as cars become more complicated and more computerized. In terms of what they're planning, first of all, Intel already has a factory in County Kildare in Ireland. And they're going to set aside some of the capacity in that plant to make chips for the auto industry based on other people's designs. So that's kind of a short-term fix, if you like. But some of that capacity will be diverted to the auto industry. Beyond that, the company has ambitious plans to build new mega factories in Europe, as Pat Gelsinger, the chief executive of Intel, told me when I met him earlier.
Building a new mega fab in Europe, I believe, will just reestablish what we've called this geographically balanced supply chain. Europe used to be 44% of worldwide semiconductors. Now it's 9%. Just this decline as everything moved to Asia. If you look at the premium segment cars, about 4% of the bill of materials of the car is semiconductors. Our estimates are by 2030, that's going to go to 20%. So you think we have importance of semiconductors in cars today? You ain't seen nothing yet.
So Theo, although Intel is working to try and alleviate this chip shortage, it's interesting because the boss of the company expects this problem not to go away anytime soon, but last the next couple of years.
Yes, and in fact, Intel's predictions on how the shortage was going to pan out have so far proved pretty accurate. You know, the company said it would get worse before it got better this year, and that's exactly what's happened. But the problem is that chip making is not something you can do overnight. For a start, it's a very skilled industry, but also the actual physical process of making the chips takes time, and ramping up production is not something to be taken lightly. So it's no surprise that not just Intel, but Bosch and other companies that I've spoken to are all saying it's going to be a rough ride before it gets better.
The BBC's Theo Leggett for us in Munich. Thanks so much for your time.
It's a pleasure.
Checking the numbers now, European benchmarks are down in the 1% range today. That's as investors focus on tomorrow's European Central Bank meeting. That's thought to include a reduction in stimulus measures here. Meanwhile, the price of Bitcoin is continuing its plunge today. It's down more than 10% to $45,844. That's on top of yesterday's 17% drop. It comes after technical glitches plagued El Salvador's rollout of the cryptocurrency as a legal form of payment. To Lebanon now, where residents are continuing to deal with a crippling energy supply shortage. Bakeries are unable to fire up their ovens, hospitals have rationed air conditioning, and delivery drivers are trying to find the best spots to fill up their gas tanks. It comes as Lebanon continues to suffer through its worst ever economic crisis. And today, energy ministers from Lebanon, Jordan, Syria, and Egypt will meet to discuss a plan to alleviate that pressure. For more, we go to the BBC's Anna Foster, who's at a gas station in Beirut, where people have lined up for hours and fights have begun to break out.
You'll hear the absolute chaos going on around me. This is a 4-5 lane highway and it's completely blocked. And then right in front of me, there's a huge group of mopeds and motorbikes or people like delivery drivers. They need fuel to work. And there are two men just a couple of meters away and they are pushing each other. The soldiers are just trying to keep them apart. Electricity, you know, if you look at EDL, basically the national grid, they provide people with maybe 1 or 2 hours of electricity a day. For so many people here at the moment, they can't afford to run their fridges, they can't afford to cook, like cooking gas, bottled water, medicines, so many things are in short supply, and that is why somebody somewhere needs to try and sort this situation out and quickly.
And energy ministers from a number of countries have a plan to solve this problem, but there are a number of hurdles, including infrastructure challenges in the route just to deliver supplies through Syria.
Yeah, that's exactly right. What's happening today, the energy ministers of Lebanon, Syria, Jordan and Egypt are going to come together and look at a plan basically to get natural gas from Egypt to Lebanon. However, it's not simple because a lot of the infrastructure that would be required to actually move that natural gas through Syria, whether or not the pipelines, the things that need to place to move that natural gas still work, is something that they need to look into. It is a potential solution, but it's one that is not immediate. And that's the big problem here. People need help right now.
And there is another plan, I guess, that could be an option for Lebanon, but that would involve violating U.S. sanctions, and that's getting fuel supplies from Hezbollah. Is that right?
Yes. This is even more problematic, frankly, Victoria, than the last plan we just talked about. Now, Hezbollah have arranged so far three ships carrying Iranian oil and fuel, which will come to Syria, because obviously they can't come to Lebanon, because bringing Iranian oil fuel to Lebanon would invoke US sanctions. So Hezbollah's plan is to bring those ships in, to dock them in Syria, and then to bring their cargo over the border into Lebanon. And it really creates a headache, not just for the Lebanese government, they don't want to be subject to US sanctions, but also for the US as well, because they can see there's a problem here. The solution that they're proposing will take a long time, but all of this taken together, as is so often the case here in the Middle East, creates a huge diplomatic headache.
The BBC's Anna Foster for us in Beirut. Thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Victoria.
And here in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.